is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live on Crowdcast. We're live on YouTube. Woo-hoo. Maybe you're listening to us later on the podcast platform of your choice. Wherever you are listening, we love it. We absolutely
love it. We love it. All those sites. No problems, no notes on any
yeah.
of those websites.
I can't think of any downsides about any sites of the internet at all, to be honest. I think it's all wonderful.
Safe space. And, no
yeah,
stress.
That's great. In any case, and actually relatedly, I think, one of my favorite sites is iTunes.com.
Wow.
To get podcasts. I love that place.
You're always hanging around.
Looking at iTunes right now?
Love iTunes. Great place to find music. Also a great place to find podcasts. Also a great place to rate and subscribe to our podcast.
We
haven't done this for a little while, but we asked folks to leave us a rating, 5 stars, and a comment. And in the comment, request a book, a graphic novel, a comic book, either current or old, that you want us to review on our Stack podcast.
That you want us to fight about, basically. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Well, let's agree. We'll see what happens. But we do have a new comment here that I wanted to read. This is from K Grimes 2. Says, been a Patreon supporter of the show for months now, and thought I'd leave a review to praise your guys' work, make a suggestion, and request a book review. The chemistry the three of you have is excellent. You play off each other incredibly well. Keeping things light while also managing to make quality content reviewing comic books. One suggestion I have is mention the title of the book you're reviewing more as you're reviewing it. You mention the title of the book before you start reviewing, and if you don't recognize it, I forget the title. But then if you sell me on the book during the review of it and I decide I want to check it out, I have to rewind the show to figure out what you were talking about.
I'll give you that.
You know what? It's kind of like how old school comics, every couple of sentences, they would say their names again. You know what I mean? Well, Captain America, I agree.
Pete, I know what you're talking about. And Justin, do you have the same thought?
Yes, Alvin. Oops.
It's funny, actually, because we did start this podcast as three chipmunks and then it morphed into a comic book podcast. So
And we have a clear example of who's the Alvin, who's the Simon, and the Theodore, right? Let's all say it in our heads, but not out loud. Never say it out loud.
We do have one more thing that Kay Grimes 2 wrote. He says, I'd like to request a review of Mark Millar and Terry Dodson's miniseries for Marvel, Trouble. It's a rom-com, and the art's great. So I think Pete should have a good time, and Alex and Justin should have a good time discussing the controversy that the book stirred, Aunt May being Peter Parker's biological mother. Keep up the great work. Well, Kay Grimes...
That sounds like trouble.
It does
sound like
trouble. It's
not Kay Grimes, it's Kay Grimes 2, bro.
Oh, yeah, sorry about that. Kay Grimes 2, thank you so much for the suggestion. We appreciate it. Thank you for leaving the rating. We are, in fact, going to review Trouble on this week's Stack podcast.
Boy.
Yep.
I'm sure that'll be fun.
Absolutely. I agree with both Justin and Pete as well as Alvin on this. Why don't we move on? Because we got a ton of guests here in the show tonight. I'm going to find our first one here. He is the creator of Digital, a new comic book that released its second issue recently, I believe. I may have the dates wrong, but his name is Rich Watkin, excuse me. He's coming to us from the UK, so it's late night for him.
Yes. Get him in here. Get it. We got to tuck him in.
Yes, we do. This is how we do the podcast. This is the second week in a row. I think we've had a UK creator.
Yeah, nice.
And our main goal is to get them to bed on time.
Yeah, that's what we're all about. Got to get your 8 hours in, gang.
Absolutely. Actually, while we are waiting here, I will say Digital Chapter 3 is currently on Kickstarter, 26 days to go. When you convert the money, there's a cute little conversion symbol here.
Ooh.
It's a $4,095 goal. He has $2,731 of it.
Solid.
Pretty well so far.
Nice. Yeah. Kicking butt.
Yeah.
Hey, Justin, I saw that hat on the TV.
That's true. You'll see a lot of my clothes, my real life clothes.
Do you want to explain what you're talking about for the podcast
listeners? Yeah, I did some light pornography and Pete has been consuming it and I wear my own clothes. The show
that's weird.
On...
That's one of the
that's weird.
Porn, I got to say is
that's weird.
Not wearing clothes.
No, but you start, you got to give them a little dramatic arc, Alex.
See, he's still going to be wearing clothes. Oh, he's not.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's just a little bit of the mystery. No, the show I work on, 101 Places to Party Before You Die, I've made several appearances on it. The season finale airs this Thursday at 11 p.m. on True TV. But if you haven't seen it at all, please check it out. You can download it for like $20 on Amazon the whole season. And it's fun watch.
It's worth it. It's a fun laugh out loud event. I had a blast.
Yeah, I'll say I'm one episode behind, but it was very nice seeing you on screen. Can I ask you, while we're waiting for Rich here, can I ask you for an inside secret on 101 Ways to Die? Ways to Die.
What?
No.
101 places to party before you die.
We'll get there.
Yeah, that's next season.
So there's an episode where they're getting a tattoo for Pally's birthday, and they do a montage of them asking you, if this is the, people keep recommending places to get tattoos, and they're like, are we going to go there? And you're like, nope, that's not the place. The last place they say is a walk-in. Was it really a walk-in, or was that actually the place they were supposed to get the tattoo?
They didn't know that we were going there, but we, the producers, had booked the spot.
Okay.
So it was a surprise for them, but not to us. And I was one of the most fun things about that time is we go in and Pally Gaber's had his tattoo idea picked out. Pally's like, I don't know what I'm going to get. And he's like, you know, I want to get something New York-y, Chrysler Building. He goes through, the artist is like, draws a sketch of the Chrysler Building. And he's pointing at it, and he holds up his sunglasses to point to where he wants it on his body. And then he looks at his sunglasses and is like, oh, you know what? Could you just tattoo my sunglasses on my arm? And that's insane.
Amazing. Hey, welcome.
And that was just enough time to bring Rich in. Rich, perfect. Hello.
Absolutely nailed it. Long time listener, first time caller. I've always wanted to say that.
Oh, hell yeah.
Not a very British thing to say.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. First of all, sweet Spider-Man cover in the background there.
Thanks very much.
We always like to talk about everybody's backdrops. Why that cover in particular?
This was a present when we moved into our latest house. So we have a companion piece for it. It's another J. Scott Campbell cover from a Spider-Man number one. And we had a little bit of spare money left over when we moved in. And there's an amazing art shop where we live, and they have these signed Stan Lee prints. And it's like, cool, this is what we're doing. And it's going right up there. So
that's
there
awesome.
We are. Yeah.
Awesome.
It looks great.
Well, let's talk about digital, as we mentioned earlier, and as we're now mentioning titles as much as humanly possible. Thank you, K. Grimes, too. The third issue is currently on Kickstarter. We got a peek at the first two, and they're very cool. I feel like, without touching too much on the concept, I feel like they're at least mildly inspired by Alien. Would you say that's right, or is that not one of the touch points?
No, actually, 100%, but not just Alien. It's kind of really kind of intrinsically covered with classic sci-fi. That was like a really big thing that we wanted to do, is kind of like with brand new creators. People don't know us. We need to kind of make something familiar. And so having these kind of nods all the way through to kind of like classic sci-fi, like in the first few panels, he's talking about, you know, the Netflix sort of thing, want him to watch Blade Runner. But there's things all the way through it. Not just sci-fi, but like classic 80s. Now, I know you guys, well, certainly big Top Gun fans.
Truth, wow. We don't ever
have Highway to the Danger Zone, baby. Let's do it.
I don't have a queued up. It's going to take too long.
There's mention when they're looking for like code names for all the characters, and Noose, one of the characters, says, oh, I want to be called Maverick. But his real name is Mitchell Peters.
Oh,
which
wow.
Pete
nice.
Mitchell, yeah, the other
nice.
Way around.
Yeah, yeah. So. There you go. Nice.
Now, let me ask you real quick. The title of the first issue is Pray to Your Gods and Hold On to Your Dicks. I have already, that's going on my tombstone, so I feel weird to see it here. What'd you come up with that title?
I've been thinking about kind of like something catchy, like, I mean, what the idea, yeah, exactly. Like the very first panel is like, it throws you straight into a war zone. Like, you're not kind of like, here we are setting up the story. It's kind of like, right, you're in, go. And this is one of the lines from in the book. And I just thought, you know what? I think people remember that one. I'm going to go with that.
Agreed.
We'll talk about this world a little bit. Like you said, it does feel, I actually meant more aliens, I think, than Alien. But yes, there's a lot of other sci-fi influences, as you're mentioning, going in here. So what's the basic concept of the book, would you say? How would you break it down?
Yeah, I mean, it was sort of intentionally, not like an overdone trope about sci-fi, but something that people would feel familiar with. So this kind of fact that we live in a world where we're so over-reliant on technology, you know, it does absolutely everything for us already. And this is kind of, we're always pushing it one step further. And so at some point, inevitably, you know, it's been driven into us since like the 50s, something's going to go wrong and they're going to take over at some point. And it's what takes to get you to that point. And then how do we react to it? You know, we kind of live in this digital world where everything's handed to you on a plate. You know, can you imagine like 20 years ago saying like a mobile phone would have a camera on it, we would have all the internet, it would be able to drive you places. And this is, so it's to put you in this position where you're a little bit further down the line and it's going to come and fuck you over.
I love that, because a lot of these sci-fi stories that you're talking about, their seeds were like conceived in like the 50s, where they were like, this microwave oven is going to be trouble for us. And now we're like literally about to put chips in our brains probably. And we're like, I don't know, it seems fine. And they would be terrified, all those authors from back in the day.
The other thing that I thought was very fun about this book is it's pretty much nonstop action sequences throughout, again, at least what I've seen. So talk about scripting that a little bit, just in terms of when you're putting together the book, how you arc it out, how you arc out an action sequence.
Yeah, it comes from sort of a two-part thing. So probably closer to you guys as well. Like I went to film school, so instantly things were always very visual for me. I had this kind of mantra in my head that like every panel is prime real estate on a page. So make it mean something. And it doesn't have to be dialogue. Put what dialogue you've got, make it mean something. But if it's going to be action, do exactly what you want it to see. And we worked really hard on together, kind of like carving out these pictures and what they look like. So I put a certain amount of the script. I mean, the artist on the first two books is not able to kind of carry on, but we kind of worked really hard with him on kind of making it feel cinematic, making you kind of feel that you could kind of be with these people and understand them in a very short space of time. Because you don't know these characters. They're not kind of like 60 years of Marvel lore or anything like that. These are kind of brand new characters, and you kind of have to jump in and kind of like hold on.
Well, I think the book is so dynamic, like you're saying, and I think that's one of the hardest things to sort of put into the book. It's like a bunch of tiny steps you have to do with, I like in some of the pages you have like off-kilter panels, the dialogue comes in different ways. Do you, like you're saying, you were working with the artist, how did you like nuts and bolts actually get into that? Were you literally micromanaging let's have this panel be askew?
No, do you know what? Absolutely, probably the opposite. A lot of it was to do with the conversations we had before we went into kind of production. So we had like a really long conversation about everything, the entire arc. So we knew the characters before it kind of came to laying these things down. We understood kind of like the overall story. And I just put the kind of the basics down, just said, look, this is a place for you to express yourself. I'm no artist. I'm absolutely fucking terrible at drawing. I'd love to do it myself. You know, I'd love to put the coloring in there, you know, but this is an expression. I'm not going to hold you back. If you've got something, great. And it was a case of throwing down the pencils, giving us some ideas, this is what you want. And every now and again, you know, you need to tweak some bits, but you know, this is a creator-owned project, and that was the whole point of kind of letting us express our own thing, sort of thing. So we did the words, Zach and I, and then we let Flavio do all the pictures and kind of let it run from there.
Well, I gotta say, man, I chewed through these first two issues. This was really fantastic. Yummy. I love the action. I love the pace that you're going at here. And man, what happens at the second issue is it hits you in the junk to be a little bit more PC about your, you know, but I just think that like
about your what, Pete? Sorry, I'm just done.
about his title. You know what I mean? I don't want to say right. hit me in the dick. You know, I want to be more inclusive and say jump so everybody can, you know, yeah, enjoy absolutely. What's happening. You know what I mean?
That's true. Way to make it across all genders by saying junk.
By saying junk, you know what I mean? It really opens things up a little bit.
Yeah.
But as someone who kind of created and helped with this really just action-paced and kind of known as Safe, what was some of your favorite images that you got back or some of your things that really kind of blew you away as someone who helped bring this to life?
Yeah, I mean, actually, if you go back, you were showing the first issue, there was that kind of larger kind of sentinel AI character taken on against one of like our big guy, you know, like our muscle. That turned out absolutely fantastically, and it was slightly different to how I'd written it on the page as well. So when we saw the images, it was mind-blowing. It's like, what I had was good, this is really fucking brilliant. So that was amazing. I'll just let you do really great from now on. And in the second issue, there's a absolutely killer double page spread. There's kind of like panels built into it. And it's a brand new world, and these characters are kind of looking up into this expanse. And the way it kind of flows through there, it was just like, this is real. This is like a thing that I wrote. Someone has understood what it's supposed to look like, and now it looks like this, and it's fucking cool.
That's awesome.
Now, this is sort of a perennial question that I ask, particularly with Kickstarter projects, but you're going into your third issue now. You have that live. So what have you learned from doing the first issue successfully to the second issue to now the third issue?
In terms of, like, the writing has to be different every single time. I think writing at one issue is easy enough. You can kind of, I'm not blowing my own trumpet, like, you can bottle lightning, right? So it's then, how do you then move it after that? Because it blew my mind that, like, people like what I'd written and what we put together. It's like, you know, what happens next? Oh, you give a shit. That's really fucking cool. Okay, well, I best go and get my ass in gear and write another one. So it's then, the first issue was supposed to be balls to the wall. And it's all about escaping Earth. And the second one is then, right, okay, we've got these characters in space who don't know each other. Like, what the fuck do you do when you don't know random people and the world is dead, right? And plus, you also know that on your ship, one of you might not be human.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. That was kind a of fun tension. Real
sense
yeah.
to...
That's the way I felt about this podcast.
Exactly. And
for years.
Turns out none of us are human, but, you know, whatever.
Alvin!
It was really understanding, like, how do you move from one place to another? Because, like, you could write an all-action sort of story, and that's not what it's supposed to be. That's the backdrop of this. Like, the title Digital's really intentionally ironic. You know, we don't really live in a yes, no, black, white sort of world. It's all about the things that happen in between those. And it's called Digital because, you know, you've got the muscle, you've got our big character Bear, who has this stutter, this sort of, you know, imperfection that people don't kind of associate with the big muscly guy, you know? And it's all about these characters that look like they're one thing and should follow a path, actually are just people who do their own thing and have their own, like, foibles and nuances, and they're just a bit weird in some ways, you know. So it's kind of been able to kind of, like, actually, we set the scene, now we made them paranoid as fuck, now it's like, how do you work out what to do? Like, you're the Earth that you grew up on has been pretty much destroyed and taken over. What do you do with it next? Like, this is the exploration, is like, do you go back and get killed or try and be heroes? Do you explore what's out there, or do you try and do something in between? And that's the kind of what we're aiming for now, is to explore more about these characters, find out about their motivations, where they came from, and whether there's more to them or not.
Awesome. Cool. Could you talk a little bit about what people can expect if they pledge the Kickstarter?
Oh, yeah, cool. So I mean, some of it's kind of quite standard. We've got some very, very cool artists. So we've got a new art team on. We've got Alex Patterson and Keely Mickelson, who are our brand new ongoing artists. So Flavio, who did the art on the previous ones, he is now going to do some covers for us from time to time. He's only left because he was just stacked out with having too much stuff on, which is a real shame because he helped develop this world into kind of what we know as now. But he's going to stick around. He's still helping us out. So we've got some variant covers. We've got a metal cover for the first time ever, which is kind of cool. We've got some original art. We've got custom Funko Pops of our characters, which is kind of cool. And we've also got the chance to be in the book. So, like, there is one of our rewards where you can be in it as one of our characters. So that's really cool. We had two, but one of those is already gone. So,
there it is.
Yeah, it's really cool.
And I just want to throw out there, I really like the design of the book as well, just the design of the logo, the way the covers are laid out, which I feel like people downplay that a little bit. But, you know, as we may be talking about with some book on our stack, I don't want to say which one, you kind of can judge a book by the cover. So getting to see this, it's good stuff. It looks really good.
Yeah, it's all about the details. Yeah, it's really.
And that's the thing, like, I can't draw at all. Like I said before, I can't draw. I just know what looks right. So I'm kind of like, can you do that with it? Can you change that up there? Can you move that over there? And eventually it's like, yeah, that's cool. That's exactly how it should be. And it's everything just kind of clicks. So yeah, it's very cool.
Awesome. Well, Rich, congratulations. Thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate you staying up late with us. Good luck with the Kickstarter, though. No, I don't think you need it. I think you're going to do great.
Yeah, you're going to get it. Really good book.
Cool, guys. Thanks very much. Thanks, great Rich. To see you guys. See you. Take care.
All right. Once again, the book is called Digital. It is on issue 3 is on Kickstarter now from Rich Watkin. Definitely check that out. It's cool stuff.
Yeah. First two issues were great.
They certainly were. All right. We are going to recognize.
We're going to recognize.
I know you're probably going to do this for trivia later, but let's take a moment to recognize Mikhail Gorbachev and his.
Oh, wow, dude. What the fuck are you doing right now?
History of the world, in fact. Sorry, I didn't want to blow up your spot. I'm sure you're going to do them for your secret movie quiz, right, Pete?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Pete just had to take a second to rewrite trivia. He took Mikhail out in his appearance in some parody movie, I'm sure.
Yeah, Hot Shots Part Deux. All right, why don't we bring in our next guests here, excuse me, because we have a bunch of them. Yes. We've got Quinn Johnson, Robert Q. Atkins, and Carolyn Shuda, all for Elders of the Runestone.
Yeah.
Hey, and the whole team's here. Hello. Look at this. We look like the Brady Bunch. I love it. Nice. Thank you so much for coming out. Thanks for talking about this book. So you've got the fifth issue of the book is just live, right? Recently?
The sixth one just came out.
Actually,
as part of this podcast, we knew we were going to be on the podcast, and so we launched it today. So,
woohoo! All right.
Yeah, it's out.
Go get it.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. Well, I love how you've rolled out this book. So not to talk about the business part of it first, but just but I think it's really interesting, you know, just as we're talking about like different ways people roll out comic books, you have, and this is a weird way of saying this, but like a very smooth, well-run website. What I feel like a lot of times, but it's important. Like it's your primary marketing tool. And a lot of people are like, well, I tweeted about it a bunch of times. That's good. Right. And that's pretty much it. But talk about that a little bit, just in terms of setting it up to feel like its own legit indie publisher, which it is, of course. But again, I think a lot of people just have those links there, and that's pretty much it.
Well, thank you. Well, that, you know, that makes me feel good that, A, you actually looked at the website. That means that, you know,
it's working.
Your website is youtube.com, right?
Eventually, but
yeah, that's good. We own that.
The Elders of the Runestone series has been something that Robert and I have been working on for a long, long, long time. And we knew, you know, we kind of had a plan. Okay, we actually finally, after working on it for several years, we finally launched it in December last year with the first four issues. We just launched them all at the same time. And as part of that, you know, we knew that there were certain things we needed to do to, because I think the worst thing you can do is be like, hey, there's this cool thing, and then not give people a really clear, simple way to just to find it, right? And so that was kind of our big thing that we've always done is everything that we put out there always has the website as like the main thing. You don't want to give people 8 million different links to a billion different things. It's like, just go to the website and it'll take you where you need to go. So that was a big priority. And so, yeah, so I just worked on that website and just built it bit by bit. So I'm glad that you liked the way it came out. You know, hopefully it's fun to look at, and, you know, of course the artwork that Robert does and that Caroline will do, we'll talk a little about that. And some, you know, some of our other artists is just amazing, which of course makes it look really good. And that's always good. So, yeah, I don't know if that answers your question, but that's
no. I think it does. And that's the website club is over. Let's talk. tell us about the book.
Yeah. I don't know, Robert, feel free to jump in whenever, but so I got the first idea for this story clear back when I was in ninth grade, so that's longer ago.
Wow.
It's one of those stories.
So,
yeah.
Last year or
like first, yeah. Okay. And so, yeah, I mean, so, and I just, the characters were, you know, and this is something that I think a lot of people do just to try to make the characters more engaging, but I based the characters heavily on me or people I knew, at least in certain aspects. And so it just became a very personal story for me. And then when I went to, and so I was kind of developing it. It was funny because like I've drawn my whole life, and I was considered pretty good when I was like in high school or junior high. And then I went to the Savannah College of Art and Design, which is where I met Robert. And for me, it was me looking around going, everybody here is like a million times better than I will ever be. So over time I had met Robert by that time, and I was like, hey, you're really an awesome artist. And plus we had become really, really close friends. We met through church and then had a bunch of classes together. And then I was like, hey, you're an amazing artist. How would you feel about partnering with me on this story that's been my lifelong passion project, which at that point had not been that long. And that's kind of how it all started. So Robert and I have been working on it since then. And just on the side, you know, because we both had, Robert's been a full-time comic book artist for several different titles over the years. And so it's hard to squeeze in this side project that's not paying yet, right? So that's kind of been the process of us just developing this story, developing the characters, and getting the artwork done, you know, bit by bit, and then finally getting to a point where we could launch it. So we're grateful that we're finally at the point where six issues are out now. So
it's out. Yeah.
We'll talk a little bit. You mentioned this earlier, but Robert, you've been on art duties for a bunch of issues here, but you're passing it over to Caroline. Caroline. Okay. Yeah. Talk a little bit about putting that aside, and Caroline, talk about your take on it, how it feels coming in for these new issues.
Yeah. I'd be happy to. So, as Quinn mentioned, when I came on, I was kind of just coming out of school, and Runestone's one of these interesting kind of life of an artist type stories. Like a lot of people who are starting indie comics, you don't know when to put something out because you want it to be your best work, but at the same time you're just getting your feet wet. And so a lot of people are hesitant to publish something because they don't know if they're good enough yet. And you want your work to be your best work. And so I think it's very interesting. The first four issues show some of my work kind of earlier on. By the time we actually wrapped issue four, though, that was done, like we finished that, I don't know, a year and a half ago or something like that by the time it was actually done. So there's this giant double page spread on the end of issue four that I think is more indicative of some of the work that I do now. And then as I've come down, and I'm actually a professor at the Savannah College of Art and Design now. So I'm there teaching.
Where we had met.
Where we met originally. And
where Caroline actually graduated as well.
Sorry, Robert, you're the professor of sick action figures. Just
yeah.
Based on your wall exactly. behind you.
I know, yeah. That's just one wall of my studio. You don't
believe me. Man.
I'm certain this isn't the only wall of action.
Exactly.
Beyond.
It's a bit embarrassing. But so the, I know, usually it's in my office at school. It's awesome.
Wow.
So the, well, at any rate, sorry, we got sidetracked. So while I'm teaching there, I finished up those four issues, and we're really excited that was able to get launched, you know, fulfilled the old Kickstarter we had. That's all done. And then we definitely want to get the next arc out. It's really the first giant story is 12 issues. And so the next kind of volume, the next arc of this 12 issue story is issues 5 through 8. And so Naomi Sky is the kind of next artist of issues 5 through 8. And she was a student that I had at SCAD, and I was like, she would be perfect for this. And so we got Naomi on.
She's fantastic.
And she's basically wrapping up the last couple pages of issue 8. So we have that basically all done. The artwork's basically wrapped on that. And so we're going to be launching that next volume here very soon. And so since we know that that's already basically done, then we knew we were going to need to get started on the next arc following that. So issues 9 through 12. So Naomi had to kind of move on with other projects that she's working on. And so we were looking for a new artist. Well, I had had Caroline in class the previous fall, and she had graduated, and Quinn was looking through. We were looking for a new artist, and Quinn was looking through people that I had followed on Instagram. And of course, Caroline was phenomenal in my classes. And he's like, hey, who's this Caroline Shuda? And I was like, Caroline, yes, that's right. She's in my class. She's amazing. And so, so then he had kind of went through her work and was like, well, would we consider her for the book? I was like, yeah, of course. And anyway, so Caroline, if you want to take it away. Yeah. So what's been your experience kind of so far getting started?
Well, for me, it's been kind of just like trying to get my feet in like so many different doors right now since I graduated. Right. I just know that I love.
Oh, no. What does she love?
Just like my passion. So I work at Claire's. I manage a Claire's, and Quinn reached out to me after I was doing like a traumatic baby piercing, and I looked at my phone and I was like, I think I just got a like job offer. And then, he was like, yeah, if you'd want to like do a video call with me, and we can talk about like the details. Basically I got on the video call and he was like, will you be my artist? And I was like, I was expecting like an interviewer being like, oh yeah, I have other candidates, like blah, blah, blah. But basically it was just like, I like your art. I think you'd be really good at illustrating this story. And I was like, what did I do to deserve this? Like, I managed players. Like,
but, I think the answer is survived a traumatic baby piercing.
Yeah, exactly. I have so many questions.
Yeah, I got my ass beat by a 2-year-old yesterday at the Claire's. I'm still recovering. I had like an anxiety-induced hot flash after it. I was and for what?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Listen, honestly,
maybe he doesn't need a pierced.
I don't want to step on your new artist or anything like this, but I feel like you have a indie top shelf style comic about you working at the Claire's.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
That would be really good.
I would love to know, though, so you're coming in as the third artist on this project. Mm-hmm. What is that like? How much can you take those previous designs and sort of augment them to your style versus working in somebody else's style? And I guess for both of you, as you're the shepherds of this project, mm-hmm. what are your directives there as well?
Do you want to start, Caroline? Or? Yeah.
Well, sure. I think if you don't mind, Caroline, just real quick, I think when I initially designed the characters or took even Quinn's vision here, I have at least a general enough kind of mainstream style, like just a Western culture, American comics, kind of general mainstream style, that it's not like crazy hyper detailed, but general enough that I would say it'd be just like anybody else coming on to whatever, an X-Men book, a Spider-Man book. I mean, you're just going to take that style and then do your version of it. And the characters themselves, luckily, are kind of recognizable enough that you're not going to, unless you come at it like a crazy, wacky style, they're not going to be indecipherable. And that's something I actually really like about it. Out of necessity, when I was drawing the first issue, that's when I was simultaneously juggling like Marvel work. I was drawing whatever, like Spider-Man and X-Men and Fantastic Four and stuff for them. And I was trying to fit this in as best as I could. And I realized I was just not going to get it done. So we hired two or three different artists to do finishes over my layouts. And you can see that in the book. I mean, you can see a slight stylistic change through issues 2 and 3. And then by the time issue 4 came around, I was like, I really want to do this, though. I want to bookend the first volume, at least with my work from issue 1 and issue 4. So I did all of issue 4. And then, but again, I was just at this point, you know, I was teaching full time and I was like, well, I just can't. It was already hard enough to get issues 1 through 4 done with me working full time, either doing comics and other things. So we then brought in Naomi and I was like, we've already had so many artists involved that I kind of came to the realization, this is very much like any other mainstream comic. You have a rotation of regular artists.
Yeah.
And it's not like you all of a sudden lose who these characters are. I mean, there's been dozens of artists on these titles over the years, and it's not like you forget, you know, who Hellboy is or who, you know, who these characters are. And so I'm not too worried about that. Instead, what I love is that each new artist comes in, and what we've been doing is thinking about this arc. For example, the second arc really dives into the characters and who they are at heart and what makes each one of them so different and what is their motives. And what builds empathy between them and the reader. Mm. And Naomi is phenomenal at just character expressions and mood and all of that, building that atmosphere. And then this third arc is just like this big kind of epic ending. And we needed somebody with energy, somebody that just had like a new, fresh style and had a lot of energy to their work. And then that's just really what stood out for Caroline. And so somebody who had enough of a mainstream style that kind of fit the mold of what we were already doing, but then added that energy to it. And so that's what really stood out to us for Caroline.
I have some comments too, but did you have something? I'll let you talk first, Caroline, and share your thoughts on that.
Oh, okay. well, as far as like the process of having read everything that they've completed and just like going back and forth and using it to reference and kind of growing like my attachments to certain characters, I just find it really exciting to see what I can do like with my art style and this story, but then also like hearing how much it means to Quinn and like how deep it runs for both Robert and Quinn. Like, I just feel like it's kind of an honor to be able to have the opportunity to like make their dream come to life. And then just as a little aside, the character Jenny, basically she looks like me and she acts like me, so I'm really excited to give her new outfits. That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah,
I'm that's that motivation.
I'm excited to dress her. I'm excited to give her some clothes.
Oh yeah,
that's basically her. Right?
I love you're both like wearing tank tops. Like that's
yeah, pretty really much
she's dressed exactly like her.
That's so funny.
Yeah, that was funny because like, and Jenny's one of my favorite characters to, I mean, just because she's so fun to write and she's such a fun character with some really fun humor and one-liners and a snarky attitude. And so, and Caroline, it was funny because one of the reasons that we hired Caroline is in addition to her being like an incredibly awesome artist and having just beautiful character designs was, and this is actually something that's really, you know, as I'm sure you know from all the people you've met and worked with, and guests you've had on, but you know, not only do the people you work with have to be talented, you know, and make your stuff look good, but they have to be people that you really enjoy working with. I mean, you have to be able to work well together and have fun together. And so basically Caroline and her two, I'm going to hopefully not embarrass you, Caroline, but she's one of three sisters that are all incredibly awesome artists and all graduated at the same time. And I've become like best friends with all of them since I met Caroline. And so we talk all the time and we just joke with each other all the time. And so it's really, really fun. And, but yeah, like not too long after we started talking and we're working together on this, Caroline had a picture of herself working at Claire's, I think, where you had glasses and like your red hair and in the pigtails. And I was like, oh my gosh, you're Jenny, you know, like you're, and that was actually one of the things that we talked to Naomi about too. Cause, and you know, we love everything Naomi has done in the book too, but that was one thing I was like, I am not a fashion conscious person, as you can probably tell. I was like, any ideas you have for changing up their outfits and keeping them fresh and just something that would fit still with the five main characters with their personalities. But stuff you want to try out for that, you know, would be awesome. And she did that in it, which has been awesome. And so then we told Caroline the same thing, like, yeah, absolutely. You know, like that's why we hire people who are creative and amazing to help kind of, take these things to the next level. So
then just one more time, waiting for the Caroline memoir comic, triplet sisters in college for art at the same time. We're here for it. We actually haven't heard like the elevator pitch for the book. If you can give that to us real quick, just so everyone knows.
So Elder of the Runestone is about five teenagers in high school who basically would have no reason to ever hang out with each other. You know, there's the religious kid who's just trying to figure out his purpose in life and he's kind of shy. And then there's Jenny, who's really out, you know, she's really funny and snarky, but she's also kind of an outcast. You got Dane, who's a hockey player and he just he's a tool. You just hate this guy at first, but he's this athlete who's likes to bully people. And then there's Kat, who's really popular, really pretty, but also just really mean to people, at least at first. And then there's Zenith, he's that spooky guy that doesn't talk to people very much. And people are just like, let him do his thing. And who was actually closely based on a friend of mine from school, a really good friend of mine, who actually is thrilled that I said, is this cool with you? And he's like, oh yeah. He's also like a martial arts master in secret. And so that's like, you know what? That's great. So it's these five kids that would never have hung out with each other. And then through the course of the story, they find this, it's actually during a school dance, they find this, a runestone. It's this glowing stone with all this strange writing on it, and something, it gives them abilities. It gives four of them abilities, and suddenly they've got these amazing superhuman abilities, and they kind of are forced to pull together to, as a support group in a way, but also just a way to like figure out what happened to us. You know, why do we have these powers? And then they very quickly find out that what happened to them is linked to this new, really, really scary, scary bad guy who's linked to what happened to them. And so the story, you kind of get that mystery. And then he's like more powerful than all of them. And he's called the Monolith, and he's a really bad guy. He's a really bad, scary dude. And so, so it's a lot of like action. It's a lot of like a mixed in horror elements, all the stuff that I like from horror mixed in. You know, there's all the martial arts. There's a lot of exploration of dreams and nightmares and what they could possibly mean. You know, are they more than that? And then there's martial arts and basically drama and or basically everything I've ever wanted in a comic book we put into this story. So, but that was a big thing too. Like what Robert was saying with when we specifically, you know, when we hired Naomi and now Caroline, that was one of the things that we really, really were excited about them bringing to the characters was really, as we dig really deep into the kind of the personal lives of these characters and their family lives, which you don't see very much of it for the first few issues. And you kind of see why they are the way they are and some of the things that they deal with. We were real excited about them really capturing the emotion and, you know, angst and the romance when some of that starts happening. And so, and they've just killed it on that. And it's been really awesome. So.
That's great. And it is a super fun book. I just wanted to mention, I feel like, we haven't really talked about this yet, but it feels like it's at least slightly influenced by Top Cow books. And I say that in the best way, like it's kind of sort of that amalgamation of those sort of like very classic 90s books to me. Is that something you look towards at all?
Not for me, because I mean, I don't know what you have. I'll just answer this real quick. And then Robert, it sounds like you actually have something pertinent to say, but I know for me, like I'm a huge, huge, huge Ninja Turtles fan.
Hell yeah.
And the first published comic book that I ever wrote was for the Mirage Ninja Turtles series. So it was like a dream come true right off the bat to start off my career. Awesome. But I loved, like, that was a huge, the Mirage Ninja Turtles series was a huge, huge influence on me because they had all this awesome action, but they also, for as ridiculous as the idea of Ninja Turtles is, the characters became very distinct and very deep, and you know, which is, so the story really has a lot of heart. And so that was a big, big influence on kind of how I approach writing for Elders of the Runestone. And so that's for me. What were you going to say, Robert?
Oh, just that the very first comic book I ever bought, I think, was Cyberforce number one.
Oh, wow. I mean, that's classic. It feels like maybe we were around at the same time, Robert. Because
I know.
Like that image, that first Image haul was such a big deal a comic book reader.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've gone back and I've certainly read a lot of the, you know, kind of late 80s, you know, early 90s Marvel stuff, and that influenced a lot of my work. And but I mean, that was just the time that I was getting into comics, was that early 90s stuff. And so I'm so nostalgic for, I don't know, just all that 90s Image comics, like Cyberforce and Wildcats and Savage Dragon, Spawn, all that stuff. So it's like, I just grew up on that, man. It's, even though I'm not like trying to draw like any of that stuff necessarily, I just, it's embedded into the way that the aesthetic of what the way I look at storytelling. So I think inevitably it's going to be a part of it, I think.
Nice. Well, before I let you go, we should probably mention, at least as we're taping this, and I believe tomorrow on August 31st, you have a half off digital sale. Is that right?
Nice.
Yeah, we actually were. Yeah, we thought, well, if we're going to be on this show with your millions of fans, we.
Yeah, heck yeah.
I don't know who gave you those numbers, but I appreciate it.
Plus or minus. But,
this is why we do comics, not accountants, because we're just not good at some of the other stuff. But but we thought, hey, let's go ahead and do a big and kind of the approach we've done with releasing the comic is we do have the printed volume of issues 1, 2, 3, and 4, which is collected book one, Who Are You, is basically what it's called. So that's available on our website. And then as other.
And through Amazon. Yeah.
Yeah. It's on Amazon. But that's all. You can get to all that through our website. And then we also have digital versions of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And then eventually we'll collect 5 through 8 as another printed collected volume. You can get that way, or you can get the collected digital available as well. And that's kind of how we've done it, because printing comics is really expensive, especially when you're just starting out like we are. So that's kind of been our model. So right now for today and tomorrow, so August 30th and 31st, all the digital comics we have on runestonecomic.com, if you use the discount code half off digital, one word, it'll be 50% off. And we're hoping to reach a lot more people that way and help a lot more people to enjoy the story. So.
Yeah, awesome.
That's awesome.
Well, folks, thank you so much for coming on. Quinn, Robert, congratulations on the book. Caroline, looking forward to your memoir as well as your work on the book.
I can't wait to see what you do with the book, Caroline.
Yes, awesome. Thank you all so much. Have a great
day. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, take care of yourself.
Good night, everybody. Later.
Aww, that sounds awesome, man.
Yes, very cool. Very cool book. Definitely check it out. The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kid series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more.
If you are a professional looking at the European startup scene, Germany is a place you cannot miss. Fortunately for you, there is StartupRad.io, the authority on German startups. This English-only podcast brings you fresh interviews each week. Most likely, you have never heard or read anything on these startups before in English, but you will in the future. Be ahead of the curve and subscribe to StartupRad.io podcast, or check for the StartupRad.io internet radio station. Check your Alexa for the StartupRad.io skill as well.
And folks, we are going to move to our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question and ask a question over on Crowdcast or in the comments over on YouTube. But first,
what's
why don't Why don't we talk about what we're drinking? And we should probably talk about what this week's official drink is. As everybody knows, Brett Macris, a.k.a. Stray Bullies, I like to call him, always curates a drink for us. And this week, which was a little weird to me because it's the end of August, but he decided that we should do pumpkin beers.
Don't be a dick.
It's very strange that he asked for
that. No, that's not what he did.
So I...
Listen, he...
Yeah, what's up?
He's
what's
been up? Doing this curated, like using this Gotham.
Yes,
book,
which of
like,
course, which Pete, you've been following to the letter.
Shut the fuck up when I'm
every
done.
Week, shut. even when he designed a drink for you,
you did it. You got your turn.
Sure,
he
go ahead,
does man. All this work for us, and then you were just like, you know what? I like pumpkin beer because pumpkin beer's out now. So I bought pumpkin beer and. You're the only person in the world who enjoys pumpkin beer. So that's
first of all, that's a wonderful impersonation of me. I just want to say that, Pete. So thank you.
I've been working hard
on it. Sounded like me. Second of all, when just real quick, he made that Pete Palmer that he designed based on ingredients you had around in the house. How was that?
Delicious.
Oh, really? What's in that real quick? What are the ingredients real quick?
It's vodka and soda and lemon.
Nope. Close enough.
Yes, Alex incepted our chef to make pumpkin beer the drink of the day. And I'll tell you what, I didn't do it. And I'll tell you why. Because pumpkin beer is gross. It tastes like someone coughs a spice rack into your mouth, which I, on the record, is saying. And it's also, it's a little early for the pumpkin beer.
Yes, it's definitely early for the pumpkin beer. I will say, my neighbors and I trade beers back and forth. They saw it was at the supermarket and got me a pack of pumpkin beer. So that's why I
and
had
that's
it.
Nice.
You know, here's the worst part. Actually, I'll now sell myself down the river. So they got me a pack and I was like, oh, that's very nice. But it is far too early for pumpkin beer. And then I went to the supermarket and I was like, oh, hell yeah, they have nitro pumpkin beers. Gonna get that and drink that tonight.
What does
you
that
You truly
mean?
Are pumpkin.
Yes, but I did go back to the original one because I wanted to show it off. My yearly urging, if you do not like pumpkin beers, get Southern Tier Pumpkin. I will say it is the one actually delicious, good pumpkin beer. I will say
if you do want to do this, I agree with Alex. Pumpkin is actually good. Southern Tier is a great brewery, and they don't... They're not as crazy on the sweetness and the nonsense. But
I do agree with Justin that if you're thinking like, oh, I'd like to try this pumpkin, how do I do it? Get your friend to cough into your mouth a spice rack, and then you'll be like, oh, I know how it tastes.
There you go. What are you guys drinking then? Pete, what are you drinking?
Well, I am still raiding my brother's fridge. And,
oh, God, you just made fun of me for 10 minutes and you're drinking a fucking Blue Moon.
It is very funny that you just shit on Alex so hard and you're literally drinking a beer you found.
A beer you found that's one of the worst beers.
Yeah,
I don't know about that. I've had worse beers than that.
Sure, but it's very bad.
Like a warm Milwaukee's Best that you are passing around as a 12-year-old. Shout out to Stray Bull in the comments. It's what Tim Burton's farts smell like. Shout out to that, because I agree with that. I just finished a lovely Manhattan, and now I'm cracking open a great Labatt Blue Pilsner.
Oh, nice.
Upstate New York, baby.
Blue,
let's
bro.
Do it.
Open in the blue.
Nice. All right. Why don't we go to some questions here? We got a tie-in from Ben the Border Collie. Says, what's wrong with pumpkin Four Loko?
There's nothing wrong with that.
Four Loko is what's wrong with it. And
no, there's nothing wrong with that.
You're taking two horrible things and mixing them together, hoping maybe they'll cancel each other out, maybe. Yeah.
It's like saying, what's wrong with drinking Clorox? And I'm nothing. You can't blame Clorox for it. But if you choose to drink pumpkin Four Loko, you are messy with your life. You're messy. And that's fine. Be messy. Be messy. But if you're like, I drink Four Loko, A, questions. Second, if you're like, I want to drink a seasonal Four Loko, I'm like, pumpkin? You want to drink pumpkin Four Loko? That's true wild behavior.
Oh, my God.
We got this from Stray Bullet. Says, this is based off comments in the comments. We all remember 6 degrees from Kevin Bacon. Is it possible to do an updated version with 6 degrees from Keanu?
This is... Let's think. I mean, he has been in some movies with large casts as well. Like he, like John Wick, hard to connect, right? Hard to connect to John Wick.
Yeah.
With other, because there's not a lot of other stars in it. But he's done movies with, you got a Sandra Bullock connection, obviously, the Lake House.
Sandra Bullock.
I will say, though, John Wick, you got Ian McShane. Ian McShane, who was in Game of Thrones. That connects you to literally every person who lives in England.
Uh-huh. That's true. American Gods as well, which gets you and Western show Deadwood, which gets you a lot of other
so maybe it's 6 degrees of Ian McShane, the most prolific actor of our time. I'm gonna say yes, it is possible. All right, this is from Derek Mainhart. Do you know the actor Kevin Bacon, Pete? Have you heard of him?
Yes.
Yeah, there's this game people played called 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. Have you ever played that game?
Yes, I have. Yes.
Okay, we're doing that, but with Keanu Reeves. But we've moved on, so it doesn't matter. This is from Derek Mainhart. I started listening to the podcast during the pandemic, so I'm only familiar with the online version of the show. What's the thing you miss most about doing the show live at the Pit, and what's the thing you miss the least?
Great question.
The thing I miss the most is everybody loved pumpkin beer back when we were doing the show live, and I never got made fun of for it.
Oh, wow. That's so topical. Why don't you
think it's just about the audience is too far away to see our drinks. So we didn't talk about it.
We used to do it across a football field.
And to be fair, when we got to the bar afterward, we made fun of you about what you were drinking.
Fair.
I mean, what I miss the most is like we just the audience behind the scenes.
Aaron, Kevin, you know, like looking out in the audience and seeing people's faces and being able to react to that live audience was awesome.
Agreed.
What's and nice about doing it this way is just that it's easier to get guests because they don't have to come to a physical location.
That's true. Plus, you can steal beers from your brother, which would be harder to do at a
free beers. Why are you mad at me for drinking free beers?
Not mad, just continuing to talk about it. Also, Blue Moon, embarrassing choice. That must truly be the last beer in the fridge, right? Please tell me.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Then that's fine. But let me say, seeing you guys in person and the behind the curtain of that is we used to meet at the Pit, especially when we first started in the show, 2 full hours before we started the show. We would read comics. We would bullshit. We would do whatever. Show. This is before we were even podcasting. We were doing an absolute no mics, just the three of us talking for hours for no reason while we read comics. We would do the show. We would go out afterwards. It was truly a blast. And I miss all of that time and hang.
In real life action.
Yeah,
absolutely. Hopefully, I know we keep talking about it, but we definitely will do in person at some point. We got a question here.
The part I missed the least is being exactly. Did the tech work? Are the mics working? Jesus. Did we record that one?
After the show, the mics didn't work. Yeah.
I don't know about you guys. I still do a fair amount of prep before the show, but being able to do that upstairs and then coming downstairs, that's pretty nice.
Yeah, you know, when I come down fully 15 minutes early for every show,
All right, this is from Killy McLeod over on YouTube. What are your thoughts on a Venom and Spider-Man crossover movie? What do you think about that?
Why not? The crazy part is it's a corporate problem. There's a corporate problem there.
That's what I'm talking about.
But I do think it's a fun. As far as like the fun quotient of it, like the Venom, the amount that everyone on the Venom creative team takes Venom seriously, and how they like propel it into like weird and fun choices, lines up perfectly with the Spider-Man choices and the sort of like wild choices, especially the last movie, which was like wildly insane. So like, I think there's a great connection.
Well, let me throw this out to you as a follow-up then. Which Spider-Man, because now we have all three Spider-Mans in continuity. Would you want to see Tom Hardy's Venom go up against Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, Tom Holland?
Tom Holland.
I dare anyone to say anything else besides Tom Holland.
A lot of people, like, I've seen a lot of people say they want Andrew Garfield to do it.
I love Andrew Garfield, and the most emotional moment of that last Spider-Man movie was his shit, and I love it. And I think he's a great actor across the board. I just think it's such a lateral weird move to be like, yeah, this one's with Andrew.
This is another great question here from Diana Davis in the comments over at Crowdcast. Which Venom? Like, so I feel like Topher Grace versus...
Yeah, we've already seen the Topher.
Andrew Toby. Garfield is the thing that everybody wants.
Give them what they want. Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see Topher versus Hardy. Venom. Mm-hmm. Venom fight.
Wait, and what about, what's his name? Danny Rojas, who's the bar head tender.
Danny Rojas!
Who maybe is the new Venom of the MCU. You know, maybe. You could have him.
But here's the thing.
Three Venoms.
I also don't think the MCU should do a Venom. That's a weird... That's not going to work.
I don't know if you're going to get your wish there.
Yeah. So I think you have to make it happen in the current context. And that's the only way to do it.
All right. This is from Kevin. Following up on the theme of 80s and 90s nostalgia, what are other periods you would like to see nostalgia for in comics?
Great question. I mean, the Batman 66 stuff that has been around for like quite some time is fun. That's very specific. Otherwise, I do think the wild inventiveness of 70s comics matches up really well with our current culture, I think. And like spinning off into more psychedelic and stranger worlds feels like be a nice refresher for both of our mainstream comic book universes.
Yeah, I mean, I would love a Liquid Television type of thing where it's kind of artistically led, but also gives you like a bunch of different options under one umbrella.
We got some Tide questions here on Crowdcast and also YouTube. Over on Crowdcast, Jonathan McCool asks, what is your verdict on the new Game of Thrones show? And over on YouTube, Nelson Martinez says, are you guys watching House of Dragons? Thoughts? Also, have you checked out the Game of Thrones graphic novel? Never checked it out, and I'm curious to see how it is.
You guys checked out the graphic novel?
We
reviewed one or two of the issues way back in the day, and I think it was fine. You know, that was my overwhelming impression, was like, yeah, this is fine.
I'd be curious to read it as a whole and see how it hangs with... It's just interesting, something that was a book into the show and then back into a comic book. It's sort of like is...
I think it's a direct adaptation of the comic, of the book.
Of the show. Of the book.
Yeah, the book. But
I haven't gone hog wild yet. I haven't dipped my toe in the House of
Dragons. Well, you don't watch Game of Thrones at all.
No, I don't. Can you just jump in though on the hog, or do you got to go back and go Game of Thrones before you hog?
On the hog?
No, the fans. It's House of the Dragons. It's House of the Dragon. People call it Hot D. So Pete, what you want to say is, can you just hop on that Hot D?
Yeah, hop on it.
Yeah, you know, Pete, you can hop on that Hot D anytime you want.
Oh, thanks, man. I really appreciate it.
Anytime. You grab a blue moon, go hog wild on that Hot D.
great pull quote for the eventual... Pete's Tombstone. Why not? I already talked about it.
pull quotes? That's what
we were talking about. Your
pull quote for the Tombstone.
Oh, God, I can't believe Pete died. What's the pull quote for his Tombstone?
It should be a quote. It should be a quote from whatever Pete is most known for saying, which would be "fuck you too."
Really? I feel like his Tombstone would say, "That's bananas good" at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Or "it was worth it for the art alone."
Yeah, that would be great on a Tombstone.
It walked past by like, wow, he must have really appreciated medium.
This guy's an art lover over here.
So to answer your question, though, about the graphic novel, we reviewed a couple of issues back in the day. I thought it was fine. In terms of House of the Dragon, though, Justin, two episodes in, how are you feeling?
I'm loving. I feel like a strong start for this. I feel like I like that they're not beholden to what happened before. They do some nods at the top of the first episode, which I thought were well done. A little too much use of the word Song of Ice and Fire, perhaps, at the end of the first episode, but okay. But I think the characters are really, really interesting. It's intense. It feels like the more intense seasons and episodes of the original Game of Thrones in a good way. And Alex, I know you were both on board with this using the same theme song, no notes. So great.
I just had some questions. Yes. Was it as shitty of a start, would you say? Because that first episode of Game of Thrones, we all know that king.
No, you should check it out. It's like the Ted Lasso of the Game of Thrones franchise.
I didn't get to finish my question.
You were upset about Bran being pushed out the window. I've already explained
to you. Thrown out the window, motherfucker. He wasn't like pushed. He was pushed.
Yeah, he was pushed out of the window. He was pushed out of the window. But
he was thrown out.
Yes. I have told you several times on this podcast that that is the worst thing that happens in the entire run of Game of Thrones. It's all uphill from there over the course of six
That's
seasons.
That's true. I've tried
questing
to
a finale that everybody unequivocally loved. So you should definitely check that out. But House of the Dragon is even better. It's like watching a ray of sunshine just coming down.
My question being, yes. Is it a better start to a TV show? Can I watch it and not? Is there any Pete moments where I would be like, fuck this whole show? Or do you think it's okay? Yeah,
like, so I'm so sorry, Pete, but you're right. You can't watch this show.
Okay.
if Bran falling out the window and he.
What did that fall, motherfuckers? Don't put that on the kid.
If Bran trips on a banana peel, slips, goes, and falls out the window like he does in the first episode, as we all know, you're not going to like House of the Dragon.
Okay. I think it is intense. It may be, because I found it very intense the first episode and was like sort of scared for a while. I think, Pete, it is strong for you. So if you do want to get on board, just be careful. But yeah. I think it's great, and I'm going to watch all of it.
Yes, I love it as well. I can't believe how much I loved it. I know I've mentioned before, but I've watched the first six episodes. The third one is my favorite. Like, that was the one that completely sold me on the show, and I was like, oh, I'm in. Let's go. This is great. I think it's just really just well-structured. Some incredible big moments happen. There's some things that I think are going to be very controversial as they go, as you might expect, but... I don't know. I didn't think I would be so excited to have Thrones back as I am, but it's great.
Is it still like pro incest and stuff?
You're not going to want to watch it, Pete. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Pro incest.
It's never pro
incest. Pretty pro incest. The episode.
There's an uncle and a niece that they're kind of in love, and everybody's shipping them and wants them to get together, but it's not like it's pro incest.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
This is from Killy McLeod, says, is it true they're making another Archie comic show? The answer to that is maybe. I know a while ago they said Roberto Aguirre Sacasa was developing something. I don't think anything is happening with that, frankly. But there is a Indian movie of, I think it's just called The Archies, that is coming out on Netflix. And I think they're going to release that internationally as well. So that's not a show, but that is another take on Archie comics that is coming out at some point.
I would be very surprised if there's anything coming out of from the Archie world before Riverdale ends. And then I would bet there would be a period of like a year at the very least after where there wouldn't be anything.
Well, there
is. Got to wait a whole year?
I'm completely blanking on the name of the character, but it's an Asian kid detective character who is completely new, going to be introduced in Archie Comics later this year, who is being developed into a show on the CW. But with everything going on behind the scenes of the CW, who knows if it'll actually happen? I'm very doubtful of it. Also, it's not connected to Riverdale or Chilling Adventures of Sabrina or anything like that. It's an entirely separate thing.
And let's just shout out in general. TV's fucked up right now. TV's a little... There's a lot of chaos going on at TV right now. And I think there's the glut of COVID and all the shows coming out in the last year, 6 months. We're going to keep riding that wave. And there's going to be a weird period where it's like the TV's going to be weird and then it'll fix itself. But we're in a weird part coming up, I think.
Oh, man.
We got a question from Diana Davis here. Have you guys been watching Reservation Dogs?
Hells yeah.
Yeah, Pete, you want to talk about it.
It's such a great show. Love the new season. I love where they're putting the characters. It was tough, you know, because they kind of, you know, they had their own little journeys. So we have some characters in separate places. But man, it is just such a well-written show. Love all the different characters they have and the way they interact. It's got such a kind of cool feel to it and a great rhythm and just so well produced and made. Amazing music. I can't say enough great things about it. It's one of my favorite shows.
Not a lot of great comedies out there right now, and that is one of them.
And last but not least is from Ben the Border Collie. I may have missed it. What's the story about Pete's brother's fridge?
Great question. It's right there, and he doesn't...
Oh, wow.
Everybody be cool. He doesn't know I'm taking his beers, but...
We've been doing this. You've been at your brother's for what? A month, 6 weeks now?
A month,
He knows.
You think he notices?
Yeah, possibly. All right, and that is it for your audience questions. Woo-hoo! Now we're going to move to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. Do we have somebody, or are we looking for a first hand up person?
Yes, whoever would like to do trivia for $25, Midtown Comics,
throw just a
say
hand
hey
up,
or me hand. Or anything like that. Raise your hand either in the comments. Ooh, we have It's Comics. We'll do it in chat over here on Crowdcast. Nice. All right, yeah. There we go. We got a contestant, Pete. You ready?
All right, yeah.
And I'm sorry again, I blew up your spot. The third answers are all going to be about the late, great Mikhail Gorbachev. Presumably,
how do you feel about this bit that you're doing, that you keep doing? You feeling good about it?
Very good.
I'm glad one of us does. All right. So today's trivia.
Are you a big fan, Pete?
I'm here for it.
I don't know what you're getting at. Okay. Today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend David Warner, RIP. Please listen to all three options before you make your selection. Okay, it's comics. Here we go. Question number one. Coming out in October, it's Chilling Adventures of Blank. And the hint is, there will be justice for those who are cruel to animals. So it's Chilling Adventures of Blank. Is it A, Sabrina, B, Salem, or C, Shonda Farr? So it's either going to be A, or it's going to be
A makes a lot of sense, though, Pete. Is what
well, it's, that's already out. You know what I mean? So why would that be coming out in October? B is correct, It's Comics.
Hmm. And I just want to say D is Werner Herzog. All right, go ahead.
Oh, that's hilarious. Kevin, cool story. I'd like to hear more. All right, here we go. Question number two. Amazing Fantasy number 1000 is celebrating 60 years of blank. Is it A, Spider-Man, B, Small Beabody, or is it C, Paul Giamatti?
Or is it D, Margaret Thatcher?
Interesting. Interesting that we keep getting D's in here when...
Trying to throw some D's in. That's a great spot for us to be a part of trivia, Pete, the D's.
Yeah. Pete, you said you wanted to jump on that hot D, so I'm just trying to help you
out. Oh, I appreciate you adding that. Yes, it's comics. A is correct. Last question.
My man Alex heating up the D's.
Dark Horse, speaking of D's, Dark Horse has teamed up with Colin Bunn for what horror comic? Is it A, Shock Shack, B, Shock Shop, or is it C, Kris Kristofferson?
Or is it D, Ronald Reagan or Boris Yeltsin? Your choice.
Oh, wow.
You don't usually see an answer with a separate stuff in.
Separate stuff there. So it's B. Either A, don't pick it, or it's B. Yes,
there
it is. Correct.
Wow. And, congratulations. Shoot us an email at comicbookclublive@gmail.com, and we will get you a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. And can you... figure out what Pete's C answers add up to.
And it's actually a nod to Justin's favorite movie, the 2001 hit Planet of the Apes.
And the D answers, I don't know if you could figure out, were added up to Meeting Gorbachev, the series of conversations that Werner Herzog did with him.
Wow. Alex running a separate roasting quiz underneath Pete's quiz.
As we all know, comics are cool. They're coming out all the time. Pete, what are you looking forward to that's coming out this week?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm glad you asked me. I'm looking forward to Breakout number 3, as well as Amazing Fantasy number 1,000.
They've been working so hard.
And Thunderbolts number 1.
Wow, that's a lot of stuff with no explanation. Go ahead, Justin.
I got to give it up for Superman War World Apocalypse number 1.
Oh, man.
PKJ's Philip Kennedy Johnson's epic Superman story where he has really gone through it on War World to a close, at least for now. There will be ramifications, I believe. It's out today. Really fun plug. Check it out. Check out the whole run.
I'm going to bring up two things here. One, Ant-Man number 2 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing. We were mentioning trips through time, and this is a super, super fun trip through the history of Ant-Man. We'll be talking about that issue. And then the other one that I wanted to give a shout-out to was the Vampire Slayer number 5 from Boom Studios.
Classic.
That's a good one.
Well, we've been a little back and forth on the Buffy the Vampire Slayer stuff, but I love what Sarah Gailey has been doing with these titles. It's super cool. I'm excited to check this issue out because I thought the last one was super, super fun. And we're going to be talking about all those issues and many, many more on our Stack podcast, as well as Trouble, as teased earlier, Wednesday, 9 a.m. in the Comic Book Club feed and also our Stack feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show.
Thanks for joining us.
Couple of people we need to thank here. We want to thank Rich Watkin, Checkout Digital, which is on Kickstarter now for issue 3. Also, Quinn Johnson, Robert Q. Atkins, and Caroline Shuda for Elders of the Runestone. You can check out a half-off digital sale, at least as we're taping for the next 2 days. So do that. Next week on the show, we're going to have two good friends of the show are going to be here. Jim Festante and James Asmus are going to be here to talk about Dark Horse Comics' Survival Street, a wild post-apocalyptic riff on Sesame Street that has become only more president with HBO Max taking all of the stuff off. So apocalypse
survive.
Yes. Yeah. There you go. A couple of other things to plug. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, running every Thursday talking about She-Hulk. Also, the Doom Room, our Doom Patrol podcast, also on Thursdays talking about Doom Patrol. Patreon.com/comicbookclub. Support this show and all the shows we do. Subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, grab a pumpkin beer, jump on that
Don't throw that out there.
I just
I'll be a Nola. I'll be a Nola.